Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. And Dr. Alan Chartok speaking with the governor of New York State.
And good morning, Governor. It's great to have you with us. We very much appreciate this valuable time. Okay, so let me start by saying, Governor, the budget talks broke down over the weekend because you and the legislature have different revenue projections for the coming year. Now, I've been around for a long time. As you know, I'm an old man. And one of the things that I have seen again and again and again is the legislature wants to spend more money, and the governor and usually the controller find themselves in a position of having to hold things down. That's a question.
Yes. I didn't actually hear the question, but I hear the tone. The question is in the tone. This is a different environment politically, and it's a different legislature. I've done a number of budgets with success, Alan, but you're exactly right. The first question, especially this year, is the revenue forecast and the numbers. I am proud that we've done budgets on time. I'm more proud that the budgets have been right. People forget. You can do a budget that gets passed, but then turns out to be inaccurate, and then you have to come back and readjust because the revenues or the expenses didn't work. So on time is important. Being right is more important. Legislatures like to spend. It's the Italian grandmother that food is a proxy for love. Eat, eat, eat. The legislature just won elections. They want to go back to those groups and say, here's more, here's more, here's more. The problem is we're in a fiscal environment where we have less and less and less. I am telling you, this SALT Trump tax reform is hurting the state. We've seen a $2 billion drop in revenues already, and I'm not doing an irresponsible budget. And they signaled that when they have higher revenue forecasts than myself, I believe it's going to be higher than the controller. We had an economic forecasting conference where all the independent economic forecasters came in and said this economy is slowing down. So we have to be responsible on the numbers. And on time would be nice, but being right is essential. And I'm not going to do a budget that I know is not going to stand up to the test of time. It's not even smart for the legislature to want that budget. Yes, they want to give out a lot of goodies, but there's economic reality. And this budget has to have a middle-class tax cut. I believe that, especially in light of SALT. We have to have a permanent property tax cap, because when people take that big property tax hit this year from SALT, I at least want to be able to say, well, stay with us. On the state side, we have a 2% cap. We have to fund the MTA. That has to be done. They don't want to do it one way. Then we have to do it with fair increases. And we have to reform the criminal justice system. Those things have to happen. I think they make a big mistake if they don't do marijuana in the budget, because I think they're going to be in trouble if they don't get marijuana done by the budget. I think it's a mistake to leave it for afterwards.
So,
I've said it.
So why don't they want that, Governor? Why don't they want the marijuana?
It's difficult and it's controversial. That's why I say do it in the budget. See, the budget is a point in time, Doctor, that requires people to make tough decisions. And left to our own devices, we don't want to make a tough decision. Sure. Let's be honest, especially a legislator, right? Yeah. Legislator who does nothing wrong. Why should I make a tough choice? I'd rather not. The budget says you have to make a tough choice. Once you get past the budget, then you can go back into debating dialogue mode. But I think if they don't get marijuana done in the budget, you're going to see real trouble on it, and they're making a mistake.
And what's the real trouble?
I don't think they get it done.
Oh,
and
I
they've
see.
Already signaled that they want to do it after the budget. And I said at that time, it's a mistake. But permanent property tax cap, criminal justice reform, funding of the MTA, we have to get done. And we have to have a budget that's a real budget and matches up with the numbers. And I'm not going to do a budget that doesn't.
And what's the consequences, Governor, if they don't do this? I remember during the great pay debate, whether they got pay or not, one of the things that was attached to the agreement at the time, I don't know if it still is they don't get paid their salary, their increased salary. They have to give that up if they can't come to agreement. Is that wrong?
No, you're right. We said in the law, not in the pay commission, we said in the law last year that set up the pay commission that it had been a long period of time without a pay raise, about 17 years, but frankly, not many of the legislators were there for 17 years. But we said it would be performance-based. And the performance for the legislature, the one benchmark is get the budget done by April 1. Everybody says, well, the legislature won't get paid. Yeah, what they leave out is the executive doesn't get its raise either. And I've hired a lot of commissioners on the promise of the new increases. So not getting it on time is a double-edged sword. The legislature says, I don't even know that some of them read the law. I spoke to one member over the weekend who didn't even know the executive didn't get paid. He thought it was just the legislature that didn't get the increase. But it's both. The legislature doesn't get the increase, and the executive doesn't get the increase. And look, I have no problem saying to the people of the state, if they get their job done, they deserve a raise. And if we don't, neither of us deserve the raise.
Yeah, but you don't have to worry. Chris will loan you some money, because as you said in the last time we spoke, he makes a lot.
He makes a lot, and I'm not spending that much. But my commissioners... Look, we have commissioners.
I got it. We got it. We got it. We got that part. We got that part.
Okay.
Let's go to Comptroller DiNapoli. He has to establish the state revenue estimate. Are you in touch with him?
No. Yes, I talked to him. I have not spoken to him about the revenue estimate. The way the law works, though, you're right. If we don't come up with a consensus, which we didn't, then it goes to the controller. The controller picks the revenue estimate. My guess is the controller, who will not be motivated by politics, you know, why do they inflate the revenue estimate? Because they want to spend more. So they want to project that the revenue is going to be higher, because whatever they project in revenue is what you can spend. And look, I like to spend too, right? There's a lot of good things that we can do. But I want to make sure that we have the actual revenue to back up the forecast. The controller doesn't have that political concern. And the controller sat there in the forecasting conference and heard every independent expert come in and say 40% chance of a recession. You know, so I would be shocked if he didn't come in with a realistic option.
Well, I'm a big fan of his, but he does have a horse in the race, right? I mean, in other words, controllers by nature should always be conservative, because if that's outspent, somebody's going to be pointing a finger at him and say, we didn't raise what you said we would.
Well, that's the interesting dynamic here, is because it's now going to be his number and his responsibility. And if that doesn't turn out to be the reality, you're right. It's the burden is on him. Normally, in the years past, we've come to a consensus forecast. So if it didn't turn out to be accurate, it was the legislature, it was the governor. But now it will be the controller's number. So my guess is you're right. He's going to want a realistic number, because right or wrong, everyone's going to know.
So I have a lot of things I want to talk to you about, and we only have a few more minutes, you know, 15 minutes or so. So I want to ask you very quickly, there's a New Atlantic Magazine article about you and suggests that you would like to run if VP Biden doesn't run for president. And the article said if, but you didn't totally rule it out. There are a lot of people, Governor, there are reports all over the place that, you know, despite your past assertions that you would serve out your term and you wouldn't do it, that you are looking to run for president.
Who said that, Alan? I will call them right now.
I just gave you one.
look, we live our lives on a set of assumptions and a set of realities. I have a set of assumptions as to who is going to run and what that means for the country and what this Democratic election is going to look like. I think it's essential that the Democrats win. I am frightened out of my shoes about President Trump.
Sure.
And I think the Democrats should win unless the Democrats blow it. And I believe the Democrats are capable of blowing it. So I think I've had conversations with people, obviously, and I think certain people are going to get into the race. And I'm basing my assumptions
certain
on that.
Certain people mean you mean Biden, right? So in the end, it doesn't it come down to Biden, the centrist in the party versus, you know, your uber progressive, Bernie. Isn't that what it's going to come down to?
No. See, I want to have the dialogue because I want to question those choices. I'm the uber progressive. Name a person who has gotten more progressive things done than I have. Name a governor, name a senator, name a mayor who has done more progressive things than the state of New York. You cannot.
So it sounds like Governor, like you're running for president.
No, doctor. I want to debate terminology and labels. You cannot be a progressive if you have not created progress. This is all an illusion. Well, I advocate for the perfect. Nice. That's a great ideological perspective you have. A beautiful vision. The problem we have is reality-based. And we have a Democratic Party that has talked and talked and talked and not made a difference in people's lives. That's why Donald Trump is president. He didn't win. The Democratic Party lost. We need a progressive, reality-based party. We need people who can actually get something done. You can't go back out there with great aspirations and visions of a future for all that has no credibility.
So is that a hit on Bernie?
No, it's not a hit on anybody.
Oh, come on. I mean, I know you. I mean, I get the words. I can parse them. It sounds to me like a criticism of Bernie Sanders.
No, it's not a criticism of anyone. It's a statement about the Democratic Party. We have to be reality-based. We have to have credibility. And you know what, doctor? I can listen to your show, and you have great ideas. If you have not produced anything,
right.
As a matter of fact, you have a history of grand ideas that backfired.
Yeah, well, give me one.
Not you personally. See, everything is personal. With
well,
you.
It is. It is.
Everything is
it sounded personal. It sounded personal.
No, I was you, the generic you, not the you, you.
Well, it sounded like you as in me.
No,
as
then I would have said doctor. I didn't say doctor. I said that you, the grand you, okay. I-O-U capital.
What did you think, now that we've gotten that out of the way, and, I didn't hear anything that convinced me you're not running for president. But that's okay. That's just me. But now, onto the stage at CPAC comes Donald Trump, and he hugs the American flag. What do you make of that?
But that's it. That is what he has been doing from day one. He has wrapped himself in the flag. He is America, American values, strong military.
He didn't go into the war. He had an ability to do that. I mean, I didn't go in, but I'm not claiming to be a military expert. He says he knows more than the generals, right? It's extraordinary. And then he wraps himself in the American flag. Some people think it was disrespectful.
Well, are you talking about reality or are we talking about politics?
Unfortunately, reality and politics can often be the same.
He knows how to market. What has Donald Trump done all his life? We're New Yorkers. We know him. He is a marketer. He did a television show. He puts his name on buildings, and then they pay him because he put his name on a building. They paid him because he put his name on an airplane. He's a marketer. He ran for president. He saw the market niche, and he played to it. He played to division. He played to fear. He did it very well. And he wants to be, he has marketed that he is the keeper of American values. The Democratic Party is now more and more removed. They're now socialists, and they call themselves socialists, which is anathema to the American dream and the American flag. I mean, he is eating this up with a spoon, what the Democratic Party is now feeding him. And he wants to make this election American values versus socialism, communism. That's what the Democratic Party represents, and that's where he's taking us.
You've been having conversations, Governor, to change the subject for a moment, with Amazon about bringing them back to New York after all. Any chance that's going to happen?
I don't believe there's a chance, but I believe my job is, as governor, you punch until you hear the bell. Now, some would say the bell sounded when they left. But look, this was really one of the dumbest governmental acts of all time, and one of the real squandered opportunities. And I'm still trying every way I can to see if there's any crack in the wall. I haven't seen one. But it was really a tragedy. It was really a tragedy. It was pure political pandering. It was fear-based. It's everything we're not. It's the formula for failure in life, fear-based. And I was thinking after our last conversation, you said the member called you up from the Senate and said, well, the governor should have rejected the Senate suggestion of generics for the PACB. What, this whole thing was a political scam? 25,000 jobs, $28 billion in revenue was a political scam? And then, by the way, the governor, if I had rejected that senator, would they come with a replacement who would support Amazon? They still haven't. They still haven't. So, I mean, it was just really one of the low points in government, and I don't care if it was done by Democrats, Republicans, zombies. It is what it is, and I'm going to tell the people of the state the truth, and I'm going to speak the truth the way I see it, whether it's about my fellow Democrats, my brother, what I would love to tell the truth about my brother and some of the comments he's made.
Wait. So now you of course are an accomplished weatherist. I didn't say weatherman, but weatherist. You watch the weather because you know, right? You know that people care more about the weather than they do about almost anything else. And we had a foot of snow in the Hudson Valley here, and I know you got out early and you warned everybody and you said you were going to do that. How important is weather to the politics of the Cuomo governorship?
It's an interesting question. It's a new dimension of the governorship. My father never did this. It wasn't really a reality in Pataki's time. Emergency management has become such a big part of being governor and having the proficiency for it. You know, anyone who says extreme weather is not a reality is just, they're not watching TV and they're not living on this planet. And then we can have a great political debate about what's causing the extreme weather, and you don't want to say it's climate change because that's inconvenient. But weather, floods, hurricanes, Hurricane Sandy, superstorms, this is a big part of the job. And it's a part that I worked on back when I was in the federal government. I did the emergency response when I was HUD secretary. I did it all around the world. But it is a very new and challenging function for the state. And I take it very seriously, Alan. You know, it's the difference between life and death. I believe that. And I say that to my team. I say when we're getting ready, if the boat doesn't show up because the trailer was broken or the truck broke down and we don't get the boat into the water and we don't have a swift water rescue team, somebody dies. And it's probably the most tangible, real function of government. You know, all this legislative stuff in the Capitol, that's nice. When you're in the middle of a hurricane, if the shelter opens up or not, if you had warning, if somebody can bring you a heater and a generator, that can be the difference between life and death. And it is a very big part of the job. And I'll tell you, it's almost on a weekly basis now.
Yeah.
Okay. Almost on a weekly basis.
Okay, very quickly now, because we've been limited to 10:25, and that gives us about 3.5 minutes, so I want to ask you quickly. I notice when you go on to make your pronouncements about the coming weather that you're dressed in a particular way. In other words, you have an open shirt and the right kind of jacket on, you know, a winter jacket. Do you have an advisor who tells you what to wear?
Yes, I have a fashion advisor. It's in the state budget. Fashion advisor to the governor. It's a titled position. That's nothing. When I was in the federal government, they would say, if you're meeting the president, they would say like storm casual.
What does that mean?
I don't know what it meant. It's like the storm. He's going to be in storm gear casual as opposed to storm formal. I want to know what storm formal is.
Yeah, I mean, we only have 2 minutes, but I read a biography of you quite a while ago, which said made a great deal about the fact that you would go out in the middle of the night when you were a younger man and help either the AA or whoever you were working for, fix up cars, change tires, do that kind of thing. Which is harder, being governor or changing tires?
Changing tires. Changing tires is real work. Here, you just sit and talk, except in the emergencies. That is real work. And I will be up for days in those emergencies. You take even a day like yesterday. We did the weather forecast. It was especially problematic in the Hudson Valley. But I am up all night because that's when things happen, you know. And again, that is a new dimension to government functionality. You know, we talk about get a budget on time. That's one type of functionality. Real functionality is that operational expertise that you make things happen and that happens with efficiency and effectiveness and skill. And there's no hiding that. There's no political interpretation of whether or not the state functioned in an emergency. And that's a pure form of management to me. And you know that
politicians have suffered as a result of misplaying the carom of the weather ball. In other words, we all go back to all the way back to John V. Lindsay. I don't know if you were you alive during the Lindsay administration?
No, but I read about it. And that was not only did he not move the snow, but he didn't move the snow in the outer boroughs, which played into that chip on the shoulder of the outer boroughs that I still carry.
Yes, you do.
I'm from Queens. I know you see Queens as an outer borough and you see me as a second class citizen.
Yeah, pretty much. So anyway, it is that's a joke. For all of you who can't understand sarcasm, that was a joke. It was a wonderful pleasure to have you with us, Governor, and we look forward to more conversations. Thank you so much for doing it.
Doctor, it's a problem when you have to tell people it was a joke.
I know.
Have a good day, sir.
You too.